Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
So, of course, the and we've said this before, our properties are, in many cases, our biggest assets. And then we decide we're going to sell it for whatever reason. And we speak to everybody, we speak to the agent, and we get an offer. And all of a sudden, we don't land up with exactly that which we thought we would. And sometimes that can be very frustrating. I guess to avoid that, we need to understand ahead of time what is for our account, what isn't for our account. We'd love your questions. We'd love you to share your experience with buying a property, selling a property, and whether it relates to this particular topic or not. Even if it doesn't, what it'll do is give us an indication as to some of the things maybe that you've struggled with, maybe that you've had a bad experience, a good experience, or something that will point us in a direction about some of the things that we should be talking about when it comes to educating ourselves around property. Taryn Harris, good morning. Hope you're well.
Morning. Howard, how are you?
I am well. Did you watch the soccer last night?
I watched as much as I could until I fell asleep. It was exciting.
Well, because you had an early appointment right here on
Exactly.
IFM. Okay, so can you first of all just explain to me the basics about who pays what when you're selling a property?
So this is always controversial, but in terms of the offer to purchase, the buyer pays all the costs relating to transfer. So that's okay. Your transfer duty, your attorney's costs. So those sort of costs are paid.
The
rates clearance certificate, the levy clearance certificate, those are all paid by the buyer. So
okay.
Today, I wanted to look at what does the seller pay for? Because
yes.
Obviously, when you're selling a property, you want to know what you're getting out at the end of the day so you can budget what you're going to be investing, what you're going to be renting, what you're going to be buying. And there's a lot of costs that sellers don't think about until they've already sold their property and then they come out short.
Right.
So let's chat about that.
Okay. So take us through it.
So firstly, if you have a bond over your property, it's very important to notify your bank that you're planning on selling. Most sellers don't know that you have to give your bank 3 months' notice or you face a 3-month penalty.
I had no idea, because I would have assumed you sell your property and then you let your bank know.
Yeah, so as soon as you put your property on the market, as soon as you think about selling, you must notify your bank, because the penalty period runs down until the date of registration.
Right.
So if you only notify your bank when you've sold it and transfer goes through in 6-7 weeks, then maybe 8 weeks.
Right. six, seven. I'm a kundi grow up.
Then you still have a 1-month penalty that you're paying for that you didn't expect, which
right.
is your 1 month of your bond payment.
Yeah.
So you can always renew your notice period with the bank, but it's best to let them know as soon as possible. So if you do have a bond, the other thing that's important to note is that you have to pay the bond cancellation attorney's costs. And those are anywhere between 5,500 to 7,500 rand, 8,000, depending on
right.
how many bonds you're canceling over the property. So that will include the attorney's cost to cancel the bond, as well as the deeds office fee to cancel the bond, and all those little hidden costs associated there.
I can tell you that maybe people are smarter than me. I would never have considered
this
things.
Isn't what you do. So,
yeah,
you know, you don't think
true.
About it.
It
you know,
true.
You only find out about, only think about it. And people don't buy and sell properties generally all the time. Maybe you did it 5 years ago or 10
yeah.
years ago, and it's not something you would readily think about.
Mm.
The next thing is obviously a big one. It's an agent's commissions costs.
Mm.
Now, most people, when they think of agent's commission, they don't remember that VAT is often added on top of that. So agent's commission, it's people always ask, how much is the right amount to pay an agent? So generally, I find that agent's commission is between 4 and 7%. Can go as high, I've seen, as 10%, but I'd say the average is about 5% plus VAT. So it really depends on who the agent is, how much they're working for you. There's a whole lot
But I would have imagined, I mean, surely most people either negotiate that or are clear on that ahead of time.
You do. You're clear on that with a mandate.
Right.
And obviously, if your agent is getting you your price, they're going to negotiate a higher commission. If you have to reduce your price quite significantly, you know, then you can negotiate maybe the commission down if it's been sitting for a long time.
Is the agent's commission being paid by the seller? Is that a South African thing? Because I know a friend of mine was telling me in Israel, there you both parties, I think, pay the agent.
So it's different in all places. In Australia, for example, you have a buyer's agent and a seller's agent.
Ah.
So the buyer pays and the seller pays, and each agent
right.
works for
You'd
you.
You pay your own, really.
Correct. So it depends where you are. Every country, I think, probably works different, but has similarities.
But in South Africa, the common practice is that the seller pays the agent.
Correct. So seller pays the agent, but what's important to note is most sellers think of the 5%, but they don't add the VAT on.
I was just thinking that, and that can be a significant
number. It can be, exactly.
Mm.
So the next item that the sellers have to think about are rates and taxes. Now, if a seller is behind in their rates and taxes, they're going to have to pay on top of the rates figures, they're going to have to pay what's already owing or outstanding on their account. So the way rates figures work is the attorneys will apply for rates figures and the seller has to pay 4 to 5 months in advance.
Right.
So if your rates and taxes are normally 10,000 rand a month, you're going to have to pay 40 to 50,000 rand upfront. And the reason being is because City of Joburg doesn't know when the transfer is going to take place. And the account doesn't close automatically on registration. The seller would have to apply to close their account, and a buyer would have to open up their account. So the seller will be reimbursed, prorated, for the time that it wasn't
that
in their name.
That it wasn't in their name.
Correct.
And they weren't responsible
Correct.
For that.
So okay. it almost works like a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
You pay in advance 4 to 5 months onto your rates account, and then every month until registration it deducts. You don't pay. Once you've paid your attorneys the rates figures, you don't continue to pay your COJ account.
Does that have to be done simultaneously? In other words, does there always have to be an account holder? In other words, yeah.
So, yes. So there always will be an account holder in the sense that the buyer won't be able to open up a new account until the old account is closed. What's also important to note, Howard, is that not all properties in around the area are on city power. There's also Eskom. Now, Eskom, this is a whole other issue, and I'm sure you're going to get questions about this. There's no requirement to get a clearance certificate from Eskom.
I didn't know that. Wow.
So if your power is not on city power and the seller is in arrears, it's up to the parties, the agent, the attorneys who should be checking to make sure that they're transferring over a clean account because the buyer won't be able to open up a new account if the seller's in arrears and can't close it. So another interesting point. Then obviously the seller has COCs, compliance certificates. So depending if there's gas on the property, an electric fence, electricity, they require a compliance certificate to change over. So an electricity compliance certificate is valid for 2 years. But every time you get a change of ownership, you need a new gas certificate.
Okay. I just want to go back to the electricity compliance because I know that this has always been, in our experience, this has always been a pain because maybe we were buying a property that we were going to renovate anyway. So it was, I didn't even need it because it was kind of irrelevant. And why would we, even for the seller's sake, why would we force them to go through something that actually made no difference to me because there was so much work we had to do in the house in any event?
It's true. And every time you change an electrical installation, it invalidates the certificate.
Right.
So you need a new one, which is also important if you decide to get a solar compliance after you do your electricity
wow.
compliance.
Do we need solar?
You do.
Oh, gosh.
You
okay.
do. So the others, I just want to mention before we run out of time,
yes.
even if I just touch on them, if the seller doesn't have a bond and they have the original title deed and they can't find it, Then there's the cost of getting a lost deed application done. So you have to publish in a newspaper. We still use these newspapers. Believe it? We still have to go and purchase a newspaper.
That is insane.
Yeah. So you have to. So that lost deed has to be done. If the original deed, the holding deed that we lodge, has an error in it and it has to be rectified, there's a cost for that. And finally, as mentioned in previous shows, if the sellers live overseas, they have to undertake the cost, if they haven't signed a power of attorney in South Africa, to go to a notary to have it apostilled or to authenticate documents and have it sent back. And those costs are quite high. Notarial fees overseas and the cost of apostilling or authenticating documents are exceptionally expensive. In Australia, in the States, in Israel, very expensive, and then to courier back. So these are all costs that's quite important for a seller to think about when they're calculating what they're getting out.
Unsigned says, how does this work with regard to capital gains tax?
So a lot of any improvements you've done on your property, you can use against your capital gain. Mm. Of course, you have a capital gain. Each party has a capital gain exemption when they sell a property that they have, if it's their primary residence. But at the end of the day, any improvements, it's great if you can keep your receipts or proof what you've spent on your property. There's a lot of costs that you can use against your capital gain. It's best to speak to an accountant on that. Also for inflation, if you've had your property for 30 years. So you need to go speak to an accountant to find the best way to pay the least amount.
And also, Unsigned says, I'm finding this conversation so interesting. We last week's as well. We are busy going through this ourselves. And somebody else asking about occupation, you know, in terms of agreed occupation, if people are being difficult and maybe aren't ready to yet move out.
I'm dealing with this right now. It is a subject, and it's often catered for in an agreement, occupation.
Yes.
But at the same time, if the sellers don't move out on registration, they owe the buyers occupational rent.
Right.
And if the buyers move in early, obviously they owe occupational rent until such time that the transfer takes place. Occupation, I think, is an episode we must do on its own.
Let's do that. And that's exactly why I wanted these questions, because that indicates what people are actually dealing with out there. So, okay, I know that we are out of time, but it doesn't really, I just want to make sure that we've covered what we need to cover. If you wouldn't mind, go through again what those potential hidden costs are for the seller that they need to be aware of.
Okay, so obviously to notify your bond of cancellation, because you don't want the penalty costs, and the bond cancellation cost to the attorney if you have to cancel a bond. If you don't have to cancel a bond and you can't find your title deed, you will need to pay the cost to get a lost deed application done. Your agent's commission with the VAT, your 4 months of rates and taxes up front, and if you live in a complex, you'll also have a levies payment that you'll have to make 1 month generally or 2 months in advance. Your electrical compliance certificate, electrical fence certificate, gas compliance certificate, solar certificate. Obviously, these are only for Gauteng based. There's different ones in addition in Durban, in KZN, in Cape Town. And you also need, if there's an amendment to be done on an existing deed that's wrong, that has to be amended. And apostille, if you live overseas, authentication of documents and currying them back.
Right. And that's if you haven't given a power of attorney.
Correct.
And I was actually thinking about this the other day. We've got many, many listeners overseas. And some of them come and visit. When you come and visit, if you have a property, sort it out then.
Absolutely.
You will not regret. You won't regret doing that.
Even if you sign, we've had people come into our offices, bring us the original deed. We keep it in safekeeping. Sign a power of attorney. And if and when, I mean, they currently have people renting in their property.
Yeah, perfect.
But if at the time in a year, and they're not knowing when they're going to come or sell or the opportunity
Such
presents
a good
itself,
idea.
It's done and they save money.
That is where we leave it. Taryn Harris, thank you as always. I'm loving these conversations. And Joan, is the compliance certificate okay? We'll have a look at some of these questions as well. But Taryn, let me just ask you: is the compliance certificate a deeds office requirement?
No, it's not. It's not a deeds office requirement. It's often a requirement for the banks when you're getting a bond that the mortgagor, the bank, will not give the loan until such time that the compliance certificates are done. But there are regulations around requiring them for change of ownership. So it's up to the conveyancer to make sure that they're there, and it's a bank regulation compliance as well.
That is where we leave it. Taryn Harris, thank you as always. This was Transfer Talk. Taryn Harris, partner, co-founder of Harris Marcus McLungu Attorneys.